Welcome to Christ Today. Heavenly Father, we ask for your understanding of history and of the events of these days. Also, we ask for your protection and provision. In Jesus' name, amen. We each have hopes in life, and when we figure out what steps to take to achieve those hopes, it becomes a plan. When a plan is made with another person or persons, and it is a secret plan, it is called a conspiracy. Today, personal plans exist, community plans exist, and also so do conspiracies. Even from the earliest times, many Bible believers see one thing or another as happening in Genesis, or even before Genesis, maybe. For what I believe, I do not go beyond the Bible understanding, but I don't mind having a lively discussion about different possibilities, but they remain possibilities and not my belief. You can say that there was an agreement between Lucifer and the fallen angels, and maybe even the serpent as well, something having to do with being like God. You know, that's where Isaiah 14:14 says. And it appears to be an ancient conspiracy that continues to this day. If you look at the ancient books about life in Assyria, in Babylon, in Egypt, in Greece, and in Rome, they all have discussed conspiracies. They don't call it by that name, but they are plans in private. And the Bible records conspiracies also. And even after those days, there were the Caesar Nero. He caused Rome to catch on fire and to burn much of Rome down. The Caesar Nero, he blamed the Christians for starting that fire, and thus there became a severe Christian persecution. And the point is, there really are and have been conspiracies, and we can see them. Now, there's evidence of them even in recent times, like President Woodrow Wilson. For some years after he signed into the law the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, he wrote down, "I am a most unhappy man. I have unwittingly ruined my country. A great industrial nation is controlled by a system of credit, and our system of credit is concentrated. The growth of the nation, therefore, and all activities are in the hands of a few men. We have come to be one of the worst ruled and most completely controlled and dominated governments in the civilized world. No longer a government of free opinion, and no longer a government of conviction and the vote of the majority, but instead we are a government of the opinion and the violent threat made by a small group of dominant men." See, that's history. And the history says that there have been those who want changes. And it's always been a debate about who says what. Did they really say it? Or did they really say what they mean? Or what did they mean by what they said? Yeah, it's apparent that these were the words of the former President Wilson, and it was written down in his diary. But there are still people who say he didn't really mean it. His words were not well published, so how could you say he really said it? Well, that's what they say sometimes. There's always arguments one way or another. And then there came radio and television, when we could hear the words ourselves, and we could reproduce the words and the speeches. And that way we know with our own eyes and our own ears that there have been others who have said things about conspiracies. Like in 1961, President Eisenhower gave his farewell address as president. Well, that address is too long to repeat, but I'll go over some of the points. The main points of it that I saw were there was a concern about spending too much money and that we would be mortgaging our grandchildren's future. And that would threaten the loss of our grandchildren's political and spiritual heritage. He went on to say that we needed to be alert and a knowledgeable citizenry, and that the citizens must be warned about the corrupting influence of the military-industrial complex. By that system, the military-industrial complex, it would seek to find enemies and create potential enemies, and it would call that our national interest and protecting that national interest. So we would then unite and we would fight these potential enemies by preparing for war in the future, which were nebulous, they were uncertain. So that's what President Eisenhower said, and after he came President Kennedy. And later in that same year, 1961, he gave a speech. And again, it's too long to repeat, but there's some highlights in that speech that I think are important. President John F. Kennedy said, "The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. We are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies and secret proceedings. America's ideology and America's government are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence." And then he appeals to America's newspapers to continue to publish the news, but not the leaked and classified government information which would benefit foreign governments and hurt our own government. And I say, yeah, you have to watch out for secrets. Be careful. I advocate that we each never do anything which we would not want shouted from the rooftops. Yeah, that's mentioned in Luke 12, 2 and 3. Shout it from the rooftops. But we deal with a world where conditions are what they are. So let's go back a little bit about plans and conspiracies. Is there a plan and a conspiracy in our world today? I know it's often said that there is, and you've probably heard of somebody like your grandfather or great uncle or somebody who would say that they were aware of those John Birch people. You know, remember those guys? And you wonder, oh, they were so foolish to believe that there were conspiracies or a communist plot to take over the country. After all, in our day-to-day life, you know, these days, we don't really see any evidence of it. Or do we? Well, it depends on what we look at. Some of you will remember the Russian premier, Nikita Khrushchev, and while he was addressing Western ambassadors in Moscow in 1956, he said, "We will bury you." So we, Russia, will bury you, the West. And some Americans believed his threat, and some Americans did not believe it. Well, at any rate, certainly you had to believe there were no communists in our country. Aha, that's what some people believed, but there really were. Often they were good-hearted people who thought about the rich should be sharing with what they have with the poor. And that way, nobody would have to go without food or shoes. Well, you can see where there's some merit to that idea, but it just doesn't work that way, you know, because what you get for free, it just doesn't have much value. I know, because I've given away food and supplies, and hardly ever are they valued, not to speak of, At the time, they're appreciated. The thanks is given and appreciation is expressed. But you find that years later, they're not cared for. They're not in the long term appreciated. So I can understand. It's just a human condition. The pilgrims, you know, after they landed in America, they had a community food bank, and everybody was to contribute to it, and everybody was to draw from it. That was a good thought. Everybody works for the benefit of everyone else. But no doubt you've heard of that Thanksgiving meal where every pilgrim had only a few kernels of corn to eat. They were starving. It's a good case that you can make about when they faced starvation. What did they do? They changed their community concept of food. They changed the method of food production, and they let everybody grow and everybody sell what they wanted. And when this method of food production was allowed, food supplies became abundant. And all this is why we have the system we have today. It's a capitalist type of society and not a socialist type of society. Not socialist and not progressive or communist. Those are just different degrees of the same concept. So, yeah, these days there's a great deal of struggle and conflict between different forms of government, whether it's capitalist or socialist. Now, in America, it seems like we don't recognize the struggle because it's not directly involved in our life. But in some of the other countries, it is easily recognized. So we do have people who recognize that there is a struggle for how to do things and by what methods to use. If you look in the Philippines, for instance, there are in the outlying areas the sons of farmers. They are young men, and they are kidnapped and indoctrinated into a life of being a communist guerrilla. And they might be taught to bomb or a government building or a public location. They're violent. So you get to see a different situation which communism brings. And aren't you glad you don't have that happen here? Well, we don't, but in a sense we do, because we still have gang violence. We still have school shootings. And it's not the same, but it is a similar form. There is a similarity to it. So there is some kind of a plan. There is some kind of a plot. Or maybe you don't see it that way. There are arguments both ways, whether it is or whether it isn't. But either way, we have situations and we have to deal with them. The situations cause conditions and cause situations. And we try to find the answers. We try to make things better in our society and for the people. I know I have friends who have a ministry. They're a married couple, and they, a few years ago, they did interviews about people incarcerated, violent men in prison, in California prisons, and that included the prison at Pelican Bay. So they interviewed about 100 men, and they found out that not one of those most violent 100 men grew up with a father in their house. And if they did have a man in their life that is a father figure, he wasn't a kind person. He was abusive to the family or to that child, that man. So we can see, what's the lesson of this? Fathers are important. There's a mother and a father in a family for a reason. That's God's plan. And we've had a movement going on in our country for 50 years, maybe longer, to say that that the man is not an important part of a family, that the woman can do everything. It's a part of the women's liberation movement. I remember probably 50 years ago, there was a saying that a woman needed a man like a fish needed a bicycle. It's a catchy phrase, and we can't let that relate to our family life, because families need two people. They need two stable role models, a man and a woman. Of course, arguments can be made each way, but look at the results. So what do you endorse for your life? Which plan? Is it the plan of men? Or should I say mankind? Yes, I should. Or should I say the plan of God? He has a plan and mankind has a plan. And do you voluntarily restrain yourself and live according to God's plan? Or do you instead live for the moment and listen to the wisdom of, well, too many people today? I think it kind of goes back to that Satanist, Aleister Crowley. He said, do what you wanted. He lived a life where he did what he wanted, and he urged others to do it too. He said that this law, a Satanistic law, was do what thou wilt, and that's the whole of the law. Yeah, do whatever you want, regardless of anybody else. So it was a biblically unsound thing to say. There's evidence to show that he was an abusive man. He abused men, women, children, and also had drug abuse situations. So what were the principles that ruled his life? Well, a lot of people had pain because of it. And what are the rules and principles that rule our lives? Do we follow our own rules and desires, or do we follow the rules and desires of our God, the God of the Bible? Well, each day we need to make these decisions. We need to figure out who do we belong to, make that choice, and then live it. Because however we answer this question determines not just how we live our life and the effects of it, but where we spend eternity. You know, after this body of ours dies, where does our soul go? The one that lives forever into eternity, is it going to be heaven or hell? Well, consider that you just might making these choices every day. It's a matter of how you live life. Not just the choice you make, you have to live the choice. So back to that question, is there a conspiracy? Well, I remember back in the 1960s, there was a radio broadcast by Paul Harvey. And it was a little segment. It was short. And it was called The Rest of the Story. And he always ended it with a musical saying of the words, good day. And so look it up for yourself. And this is one that I remember. It was called If I Were the Devil by Paul Harvey. In that episode, he said the devil would convince everyone that he did not exist, and therefore he was not a threat. And all the while, he would be promoting free drugs, free sex, free thinking, and by this, the family, and so also the society, would be destroyed. So that's what he thought the plan of the devil was. The Bible says that we have an adversary who wants to destroy us by whatever means he can, by food or famine or freedom or fascism or by philosophy or by some form of government. So be very careful of your choices, because every choice has consequences. And we can see that as we go through life. We can see the choices that other people have made, and we can say, whoa, I don't like that consequences. So look and learn. I know my mother my mother was a capitalist, but she still had a friend from early childhood, from the 1920s and 30s, the friend became an American communist. And they both cared about people, but they both had opposing beliefs in that area of what do you do and what does it mean? Well, they both cared for people. One was Christian, my mother, and the other one was a communist, that friend. I'm amazed that they were childhood friends, and they did keep some kind of contact over the years, not very much. I think I met that lady 5 times in my whole life. So they weren't close friends, but they still were aware of what they talked about and what they did. I only say this to bring up that communism, you can have a kind heart and you can go different ways with it, because lots of people want to share good things with other people. And you just have to realize, look at what it means. Look at the odd groups, maybe a communist group or a cult. Often enough, they have kind hearts, but they don't understand the philosophy going on behind it. And I know that we often have impressions of people, people who look good, but if you look at what they really stand for, if you look at the doctrine behind the group or the church, it gets to be quite different. Now, I've looked into churches and been quite surprised when I look up a church's doctrine, what that church stands for. And I can only tell you, it is important to look up the mission statement or the doctrine and what they stand for before you get involved with a group or a church. Yes, read. Look at the things around it. You'll be surprised. And even communism is a good one. I know I've looked up those 10 planks of the communist platform. Planks means principles. And it's very interesting to read. You may or may not agree with communism, but it's only an idea until you search it out and try to figure what the basis of it is. What are the basis, the principles of communism? And here's the first, they call it a plank, but it means a principle. The first one is to abolish all private property. And that means nobody could own anything except the government. And if you need to rent a house, you pay your rent money to the government. And then they redistribute all their income the way that they see fit at the top levels of leadership. So is that a principle you would agree with, abolishing all private property? Well, that's the first one. The second one is to have a heavily and graduated income tax with heavy, heavy taxes. That's principle two. Principle three is to abolish all rights of inheritance. Four is to confiscate the property of all immigrants and rebels. And property would include bank accounts, belongings, and if there was any land, that too. Five, the centralization of credit, which would mean a national bank, and that bank would have the exclusive right to print money. So that's five. Number six is the state will allow and direct all communication and all transportation. The state really gets to be in control of everything. Seven, all means of production will be owned by the state. So this means both the factories and the farms would be state-owned. Eight, equal labor with the establishment of industrial armies of workers, and especially agricultural armies of workers, and also a minimum wage. And in some countries, there would be the requirement to have each and every citizen work for a few months in the actual agricultural fields. And that has taken place by law in several countries. Number 9, combine agriculture with manufacturing industries, with a gradual abolition of the distinction between town and country by a more and more equitable distribution of population all over the country. And that means they tell people where they can and cannot live. And in a sense, that's going on with one proposal today that's called the United Nations Agenda 21. And by the way, Agenda 21 has not formally been adopted by the United States, but executive orders in the 1990s have adopted the principles of Agenda 21 and placed them into United States law. Plank, or principle number 10, the last one, is free education for all children. And that includes that there would be an established and forced education curriculum. And you could even say that that's been determined by our U.S. Department of Education. All their programs are involving a requirement to have educational standards. There's No Child Left Behind, there's Head Start, and there is the requirement for all citizens to pay their, quote, fair share, unquote, of all governmental programs. So all these things are really in effect in our government today. And there are principles of communism. Isn't that interesting? Well, I don't know quite what it means, but it's somewhat of a concern in a way. Yep, it's every principle has been adopted by our United States federal government. I'm not sure where that leaves us, but it leaves us at least with a question. So, how do we go about making these things happen, applying the laws? Now that's a question, and it's a question that lots of people have. It is a concern. It's a concern for how we are responsible. Are we socially responsible for other people, the needs of other people? It's just a question we all need to answer. How do we take care of the young or the disabled or the elderly? Do we do that by government decree, or do we do that as a community or as a church or in our own family, taking care of the young, the disabled, and the elderly? Well, it's a question that I think needs answering. We all need to ask ourselves these questions, and we all need to figure out how we want to be responsible for those other people. And how are we responsible even for our very own needs? Because often enough, we look at the government to come and help us. Help us, government, take care of us. Well, these are questions which need fundamental examinations. And you have to be careful, because if you want something, you just might get it. And it might cost you a whole lot more than you think if somebody else is taking your money to pay for it. And that's what, in effect, the government does. They have good ideas, and they take from you so they can pay for it. Yeah, be careful of what you ask for. You just might get it. But keep watch over things. You have to keep watch over all the things around you, including the organizations of, call it government, call it church, all these things, they will make laws for you which they think are the best for you. And a lot of times they are good, but it still is not necessarily what you want. So keep thinking about it and keep being involved in the process, since we would all do better if we were involved with, not to the point of being a problem, but just having an involvement and awareness with our churches, with our neighbors, with our politicians, and of course, with our prayers to God. We have set up a system. It's a system of being governed, and that's why they call it government. And still, we want to have freedom. We don't want them to govern us completely, but we want a little help. Oh, so be informed. Think about things and vote and have citizen participation. I like to remind everyone that we are priests and kings. Kings and priests. That's what Revelation 1:6 says. It reminds us that we are kings and priests. So it means something a little bit different for different people. But I'd say let's do what we can and let's live what our choices create, our thoughts create. Because if we elect other people to do it, they will want the authority to do it also, and it seems like they will take it either in an earthly way or a spiritual way. There's lots of people who want to have take advantage of the freedoms we have as individuals. We have to take care of what rights and privileges we have. And the Bible helps us with that. I say, read the Bible. It helps us to understand personally what God has for us and what His plans are. I know there's lots of people who think differently about all sorts of things. What are the arguments for this and that, or the discussions for this and that? Well, there's lots of views. So let's try to agree on what we can. And I think a good basis of that agreement is a biblical understanding. That's probably the most important thing we can do and or have, to try to examine the issues and voluntarily come to agreements and not have it done by force, which is, if you remember the founding fathers, they said government is force. Laws are a way to enforce government decree. So we have to look at things, and if we don't, somebody else might decide for us what we should support or what we should oppose. For all sorts of situations, for our government, for our military, for our police, for our food purity, for our currency, or for the care and education of our children. There's lots of things that confront us, issues, things that we can easily divide over. But I think it's good to look at these things and just try to figure out. You know, I'm going to go take a minute or two and just go over what some of the issues that we face today, things that can divide us. And when we don't have a grasp of what the fundamentals of the questions are, it's easy to be persuaded about what we should or shouldn't do, about all sorts of things. So here's some issues of today that people may well divide over, have different opinions over, and I think it's good to have discussions on all of them. The stability of the dollar is one, or inflation, or the position of the Federal Reserve. What about the United Nations global programs? You know, there's ones that are to identify literally every person on Earth and to make sure that every person on Earth is vaccinated. With what vaccinations? Well, they will figure it out and they will tell you, because they have programs and plans. What about chemtrails? Is that an issue? Are nanoparticles a part of that? Nanoparticles. Well, all these issues are involved. They get more involved in all sorts of things. We have how do we communicate? Or military communications, you know? The submarines, they go all over the Earth. And how do we reach those submarines? Is through ultra-low frequency communications. And there is a widespread belief that these communications interfere with the navigation of sea animals like whales and porpoises and even birds. So one issue affects another. There's the quantum computing. That's a question. And a part of that is with Earth communication and even with communication from one dimension to another. Look at CERN and how they're using the quantum computers. Are they for good or for evil? And is the communication to be between good or evil entities? We don't know that. There's research in brain and body interface of manipulating nerves or having a machine manipulate nerves and body function. Well, that's good if you control it, but if somebody else controls it or interferes with the computer, it's not so good. Do we want to live forever? And that's a part of what the goal is with brain and body interface is so that we humans, or at least some of us, them, can live forever. Are smart meters a good idea? Do they affect people's lives? Oh, well, they do for electronically sensitive people. Well, maybe other people too. What about directed energy beam weapons? There's people who say they've been used in air disasters or situations with airplanes. Well, there's lots of questions. Should men have robots as maids and companions? Should drones be used in wars? And who should control and monitor those drones? Would civilians be in charge? Would the military be in charge? What about our National Security Agency that permanently records our every telephone conversation, our every text, our every keystroke, so to speak, of the computer? Yeah, we just have issues right in front of us. Cameras on every corner, is that good? What about the facial recognition that, well, almost literally identify every single person in our country and do it so very quickly? The interface with the driver's license or with credit and our histories that are all recorded on the National Security Agency's database. Should the United Nations have any resolutions? And should the United Nations resolutions be adopted by our government? Should executive orders be allowed? Any of them at all? Well, there's thousands now. If we agree with them, they're good, and if we don't agree with them, they're bad. Should a government gifts be allowed? What about to other countries or other people in other countries? What about foreign aid? Should that be allowed? Should we continue giving to programs that were established 50 years ago? Well, there's just these questions. How do we determine our answers? What is godly about these things? Are we upholding God's laws as we go through these different programs and questions? Questions, questions, questions. I don't mean I know the answers, because I think it's better to look at things as a social group, as a society. What do we stand for? But there's so many issues that can divide us. Should we even be involved in things? What is freedom? Huh? Yeah. Well, how do each one of these things relate to being a Christian? I suppose you could ask, what would Jesus do? Biblical questions, huh? Or I should say, biblical principles. And how do we live by them? Well, I think it's reasonable to look at our founding fathers because they had a pretty good idea, and they wrote their ideas down. They called it the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And what do? We keep making adjustment to those documents. We adjust them here, we adjust them there, and pretty soon it's, they're questions. Do you remember the Janet Reno, who was the Attorney General of the United States under Bill Clinton? She said that people who have a strong attachment to our Constitution and who believe in the second coming of Jesus Christ, well, they could be classified as terrorists. Now, I say that, but there's been two different groups of people who confirmed that this is what she said, and there's been another group who says she didn't ever say that. So maybe I shouldn't have said that she said it, but there's evidence to say she did. So many things. How do we look it up and verify things? I don't know the real answers to these things because we've seen even the watchdog groups like Snopes. If you try to confirm information, even the people who confirm information make errors. I've seen the errors. I think every human system has errors. So where does that leave us? It leaves us to try to discern things, and don't forget the biblical lessons, because those are no doubt the most important for what our principles ought to look like. What would be the right thing to do in God's view? The Bible is helpful for that, and so is dwelling on His Word. So don't lose that perspective. Again, I say, read the Bible. Our founding fathers did, and that's why they came up with our Constitution and our Bill of Rights, because they were following biblical principles, including in the three branches of government. I know there have been people who've said that our founding fathers were not Christians, but as I've looked at it, I say strongly that they were, or at least most of them were. Yes, most of them were. And they were strong Christians with strong Christian values. And if you doubt that, go back to the original documents, the original letters. There's information that they wrote to each other, and they are recorded. Discern it for yourself. I think it's pretty easy to see that they were indeed mostly strong Christian believers. That was our foundation. These days, there's many points of view, and it gets kind of hard to argue with people sometimes because they're arguing what they want to be true instead of what is true, and they just seem to lack a certain ability to have critical thought or to go through the process of answering the questions which either support or oppose one viewpoint or another. So it's a dangerous position for us to have so many people who are acting and voting based on their feelings instead of a good logic of the way things that you want to have be. Look over these things. Look over your logical criticism and try to uphold that. Try to discern what the real truth is and what the real events around you are, and then what do you do about it? I think the Bible has plenty of examples of all sorts of things. You just have to look at it in depth, including for when people don't tell the truth. You know, there's been lots of people who didn't tell the truth in the Bible, and there were consequences. You'll see that. And telling the truth is a big thing. There are people today who do not tell the truth, and there are people who've gotten so jaded by society and people not telling the truth that they say that we should, that there's the saying, only believe half of what you see and nothing about what you hear. And that's how abused the truth can be. A lot of people don't know how bad it is, but they get so discouraged. And who can blame them? We all know liars, people who lie. Sometimes they're regular people, and sometimes they're people even that we love. And sometimes they're authorities, and the information is not truthful. I know I've said sometimes that the government has lied, and it has. It's not the whole government, but we have to be standing strong for the truth of things. That's what we do as moral individuals. We have to stand strong for God's truth and His principles. And it's a difficult situation because there are people who want to influence us. There are people who want to let them lie, and they have power. And if we don't go along with what they want, well, there often is a price to pay. I think back to Pontius Pilate. You know, Jesus, he asked Jesus, what is the truth? What is truth? I'm still wondering how Jesus would have replied to that. The truth is what actually is. So we have to figure these things out as we go through life. How do we relate to these things? What do we do? What do we do when somebody lies, or an institution lies, or releases information that is intended to mislead, or is not the whole truth? Yeah, there's a lot of questions here. There's a lot of things to do, and we just get to figure out how we deal with it in a moral and upright fashion. What would Jesus do? It's a reasonable question. It's not the whole question, but it's a reasonable question. I think John 1, and Jesus saw, John 1:17, he saw Nathanael coming to him, and Jesus said that in him there is no guile. And I think that that was quite a thing to say, no guile. And what is guile? Guile would be to shape the truth for your own purposes. Wow. There have been people who have had mindsets way back then and even today, a lot of things. So a lot of things are the same. So let's be passionate truth tellers, and let's care about other people. Let's care about their eternity. Jesus is the answer to that. So we want to spread the truth of Jesus Christ as we care for others. And there's lots of ways to care for others. And we want to do things in a wise way and showing that we care. Yeah. So we look at our political system and we want to choose the best we can, the best form of politics, and the best application of it. I think it's always good to remember that we can thank God for all of His biblical patterns that we have today. Thank God for our nation's founders who set this nation on a path of a biblical foundation. There's just lots that we can learn from how we relate to life on a personal level or an international level. It's through the biblical pattern. We want to be strong in upholding God's righteousness. But to uphold God's righteousness, we have to know it. And that's the big advantage of reading the Bible, is we get to see the examples. We sometimes get to see it just plain and clear. So uphold our nation's founding principles. That's what I think. Remember that in our military, in our police, in our government, there is a strong tendency to be good. It's just not perfect. But it is generally good, and we want to keep it good by making sure that we hold people responsible in their voting, in their actions, at all levels. We want them to know that we expect them to be as best that they can be. Well, I will use the word holy, because we are called upon to be holy, and when you have that as your goal, it's better to have that as a goal than just to be good. So, yeah, last week I said people are good. I think they are, but if you let them go off course, they will also go off course. And we want to hold them to good actions, good words, and everything else, and make sure that they do that. So that's a part of why we ought to be involved in government. Know the people and talk to the people and make sure that they recognize our views. It's just a part of the right thing to do. I know there's governments that don't support that. I look at China's government and the governments of other parts of the world, and there's just other things going on. There's territorial issues, there is monetary issues, how they can get wealthy, and they have an agenda. Communism has an agenda too. They want the whole world to be communism, and a part of that is to be in control. And I think of the Chinese president, Xi Jinping, who it was January 3rd. Now, he's in a position of being that nation's commander-in-chief. And he broadcast his message to all the many thousands, millions, of military people in China that they should fear neither hardship nor death as they create a force that is capable to fight and win for the Communist Party and for the people in the new era. I don't know what new era meant, but I can't help but think of new world order. We'll see. I don't know what it really means, but there is something that we have going on these days, a part of preparation for war around the world. And it's something that we could do well to pray about and see what we should do. Should we do anything or just let it happen? Should we be prepared? I think preparation is always good. You have to realize that all communism considers our form of government to be a real and true enemy. So it only makes sense to be prepared for surprises. You know, surprises are a tactic of war. One part of war is that your enemy does not expect an attack, or they will attack where you are weak. So where are we weak? Well, a number of places, but what I think of when I think of weaknesses are the electrical grid and our monetary system. And either one of those could be attacked pretty easily. Debt and currencies are going on in this world, and, you know, just, what was it, 10 days or something ago, there were 23,000 silver contracts that were sold, and that took the price of silver down from $6.50 to $6 an ounce. I said that wrong. $16.50 an ounce to almost $16 per ounce. And that's what that action of 23,000 silver contracts. Now, how much is that? That was 1 million ounces of silver, and that equals $2 billion, and it just all of a sudden came on the market? No, I think that was manipulation. That's what they call paper contracts. Paper contracts is when you don't have the metal, but they allow it to be sold as if you did. There's a big conflict about what these things are and how many of them there are. I just bring it up to say it's a form of manipulation. We have manipulation in our currency and in the world markets, in the World Bank, and the International Monetary Fund. All these things somehow are manipulations, and we have to be aware so that we don't get caught in a big loss and being manipulated. So I think the big thing about that is get your debt gone. Debt is a very bad position to be in, and yet we have so much of it. Personal debt, credit card debt, mortgages, all of that. And we don't know the timing of things when things are really going to be in a crisis. Could they? Yeah, they could. We could have a money collapse. Those things have happened in the past. I know I've been to cafes and restaurants where they have a display, a whole wall of currencies that are no longer good. They're just beautiful pieces of paper, beautiful but worthless, of money from other countries. Just money just doesn't last, not in its original form. It goes through transitions. We get warnings from all sorts of people, even the ex-Federal Reserve Chairman, Alan Greenspan. He was on the business news of Bloomberg the other day saying that the long-term outlook for the dollar is not good. In general, he calls it dismal. And you know what? That's right. He said, and the deficit problems are scary. So what are we going to do about it? I say, let's get a little preparation. You know, that's my word for the day. Prepare, preparation. How do we do it? Well, we have to think, we have to plan, and we have to do. Because everything is a little bit different. We relate to things different, and we just have to be careful with what's going on around us, even if we don't know what it is. We know some of the things, and we keep trying to figure things out and to do it in a way that's faithful to God. So our foundations are being attacked, and we want to keep our liberties. So let's be watchful. Let's be aware. Let's be prepared. Let's speak up to the people who can make a difference. And there's lots of people who can. So let's ask for God's help to see what we should do in the future with Jesus Christ and the Holy Spirit. Thank you for listening today. And remember, you can always listen to past broadcasts on www.christtoday.org. And that's all lowercase, no spaces. And until next week, may you walk with God, and may God walk with you.